Welcome. Thank you all for coming. Giving up your lunchtime. Hopefully we can get through this fairly quickly. I haven't talked to Mark, but I wondered if you could walk us through what's changed since our last meeting. And I didn't make copies, so I'm sorry. I emailed it out Friday, but
we got them.
Hey, for this. Okay.
Yeah, let me just pull this up on my iPad really quickly. I was going to print something out, and I didn't, so.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, Boyd. Were we having that meeting today?
We are.
I'm going to move
that
down by the
I've tried to dial that number, and they say the access code's not. Won't let me in.
Oh, I just got in on it. How long ago did you try it?
Well, I'll try it one more time. So, would you have the same access code?
Yeah.
It's 872-674-117.
Hang on. Sorry, everyone. Let's get that in here. So, yeah, it should be 872-240. Oh, so the number is 872-240-3311.
Oh, 3311. So that's a different number. Because I had 3212 as the early one I'd called before.
Oh, yeah, it did change for this meeting.
3311.
And the access code is 939-507-445.
That's the reason. Okay, I'll call right in. Thanks.
Thank you. All right.
Do we need to wait for Ed for a minute, or are we going to just...
If you want to wait just a second, he'll... And maybe you could update everybody, Paulina. You were just telling me about talking to mayors.
Yes.
And what's going on?
Jeff Silvestrini and is it Dahl or Dally?
Dally.
And then Mayor Peterson of Cottonwood Heights. They've all received the documents, but they want to have a meeting this week with us, and so we're going to meet with them to go over it and see what their take is on it, and we should be good, because Holiday Mayor had no clue that this was even happening.
So I actually met with Mayor Silvestrini and Mayor Dahl last week and talked about the surface
water. Because as of Thursday, he said he had no clue.
He talked to you that morning, and I had lunch with him, scheduled Thursday, had lunch, so we went through it.
Yeah, but that was the first he'd ever heard of the whole process.
Well, like I said, we talked about it sooner than lunch.
I know, but maybe, the gravity of this and the importance of this may not have, you hear a lot of things as you talk to people, but you don't always go home with that in your memory bank,
Cameron, when you met with him after Paulina talked with him, how
so the response was very positive,
right,
about the designated water service area and what that would mean from an equity perspective for a resident of Mill Creek and a resident of Salt Lake City or a resident of Holiday. Mayor Peterson was not in our lunch meeting. It was just the other two. Tomorrow is our policy committee. Mayor Silvestrini committed to be there. Mayor Dolly wasn't sure if he would be there, but he's going to send Gina Chamness, the city manager, to make sure that Holiday was there.
Okay.
And then Cottonwood Heights is always there. And we're presenting our resolution that is based on the surplus water, or based on the constitutional amendment proposal, as well as the surplus water companion legislation. So our resolution, it's going to our board tomorrow morning, and our policy committee tomorrow at lunch will go to a nice cross-section of folks.
Okay.
Last week, I
was asking Boyd a technical question.
Oh.
Okay.
Last week, I also co-presented with Laura and the Salt Lake City Council to
maybe
update them.
Maybe you can call him on that.
Then we've had an internal water group of about 40 city leaders from around the state, and we've been sending them weekly emails with information, and we've gotten some good feedback and good support one-on-one from different cities around the state about where we're at. Again, our conference kicks off tomorrow morning, and week-long conference, and so by Friday we will have an official position on the proposed constitutional amendment, as well as on the surplus water companion legislation.
Okay.
Boyd, I also want to update you that I did meet with Mayor Silvestrini last week, and we're going to set up a larger meeting with him and Mayor Peterson and Mayor Dolly as well, just to talk through Salt Lake City's system and how the proposed changes to the Constitution and the statutory language impact or don't impact the existing situation.
Okay.
So we're coordinating as well.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question for Cameron. You anticipate putting a resolution and a proposal before your membership that we don't have yet? I mean, this is your unilaterally created proposal that I'm reading, because we have not, as a task force, adopted anything. And I think that we still have considerable issues to resolve. So do you just want to get in front of it before this committee does something?
No. So what I said is the constitutional amendment language, which was presented almost 6 weeks ago now, that language has been waiting for official league action. So our resolution is the actual language of the proposed constitutional amendment, and then the concepts that are in the companion surplus water legislation.
So what I've heard, well, and being part of this, is that we would want a coordinating clause between the two pieces of legislation. And so this second part, the statutory part, we don't really have yet. Maybe we get that by the end of this meeting, but I don't know. So
the last time this group met, the ask of me and of the league was to take the concepts in the surplus water language and start to get buy-in from our membership. So that's what I've been doing. And the constitutional amendment, again, it's been today, September 10th, so I think it was 6 weeks ago, or maybe it was 2 months ago now, actually, I think it was the end of July, that the constitutional amendment subgroup stopped working because they had consensus from all the groups that were involved, with the exception of us, because we had to wait until our convention. So I'm not sure what your concern is about us getting a resolution this week in support of the direction we're going.
I believe that committee work is usually decided by the committee, and then it goes out to other entities to vote on. That's the concern she's having. We have not voted to support.
Right, and okay, so let me make sure I'm being perfectly clear here. Constitutional amendment is what we are taking to our members.
Just that, not this.
And the concepts that are being discussed, the constitutional amendment by itself, you need to be able to explain, here are the concepts of what else is being discussed to get some general support of the direction we're going.
This is how it's implemented.
So who's created this? Because let's see if I can look at the properties. The proposal for transparency.
Well, that's a different resolution.
That was me.
That's you.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that what you're taking?
No.
You have your own thing. Yeah. You have your own resolution.
The resolution is just the
constitutional.
Yeah, it's
Do you have that in writing? Can we? Mm-hmm. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. I mean, it's been noticed to our committee or to our board on both North's website last week.
And it's represented to them that these are the concepts that we're congealing around.
I can read it for you. Let me pull it up here.
If you could just send it to me, Kim, that'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I'll just scan it.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually fairly short. Utah cities and towns support the proposed constitutional amendment, Article 11, Section 6. And that whole constitutional amendment is going before them. Word for word, and then support the narrow ability for municipality to convey waterworks to another governmental entity that is a public water supplier. So that's in the constitutional amendment. Utah cities and towns support equal protection for all water customers within the designated water service area established by municipality. Utah cities and towns support increased transparency and opportunities for public input regarding retail water rates in a designated water service area. And then Utah cities and towns oppose efforts, any state effort to regulate the municipal legislative responsibility of setting water rates and the designation of designated water service areas, and we support the continued ability to protect all of the sources of culinary water from contamination. So again, the broad general concepts. The Constitution is very specific because that language, we've been asked to get buy-in of that particular language. And then you have the broad policy framework that has been driving the overall discussion this summer. And that's it. And that's the extent of the actual resolution, and then the constitutional amendment will be an attachment with that resolution.
So, Cam, can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. If this passes, this will give you the ability, when we go to the Hill, to be able to testify in support of things if they stay within those general parameters.
Yep, that's what
we've been looking for.
And
we've been looking for buy-in.
That's why we do the resolution process, so right. That it's not just the
committee,
the Salt Lake Cities or the Sandys or the Ogdens, it's the broader cross-section.
Okay. And I would say by the same token, you know, given the recommendation, the schedule in October for recommendations, yep. You know, I got on my city council's agenda last week in order to give them an update on where we are now so that we could get their input, because what we don't want to have happen are surprises,
yep.
You know, during the middle of the session, and you know, we want to make sure that people are on the same page and that their input is taken into consideration as well, because they haven't, Sam from our city council has been here, but our city council members themselves haven't really heard a lot of the details, and some of what we're talking about requires city councils to take legislative action themselves.
Yeah. And Representative Coleman, let me make sure I clarify one thing, because you and I have worked together on bills in the past where we've supported and we've opposed your legislation. We don't take positions of support or oppose until a bill is actually drafted. So the resolution process internally for us sets the big picture
guidelines.
Policy guidelines. So I think maybe that's where we were getting past each other, is we won't be saying we support X bill, because the bill hasn't been opened yet and there's still a lot of discussion until it gets to that point. But what we need is to ensure that cities across the state are on board with the overarching policy principles. And that's this week. In fact, you're all welcome. We'll have 600 or so city officials in attendance starting tomorrow through the end of the week. And to say I'm looking forward to Friday night is an understatement. It's not just because David Arnold is our entertainment Friday night.
Well, this is really good to hear. Everyone will be really pleased, because that's the only true way to have a real consensus on the whole process.
Yes. So. No, I appreciate you doing that and reporting on it to us here. So, okay. Back to Mark.
Okay, so if you haven't looked at this already and you were just waiting for today for the changes that we had discussed, which quite honestly are not all that significant, if you go to waterrights.utah.gov and then to the drop-down for meetings and then work groups, you'll see that under our work group there is an item that I think has my name on it, dealing with kind of some updates. It's entitled Mark Stratford Proposed Legislation as Revised. So really the revisions are just what I was asked to do, and so that's, I guess,
that's
my mention's
what
in there.
Got, right?
That's what you've got. That's the red line version. And so the stuff in red is the stuff that was added. And I'm not sure that I struck out stuff that was in the prior draft, but the red stuff is what's new. So the first thing is, you'll notice that I've just broken up into some sections. I apologize, I haven't used line numberings, so I can't refute a specific line, so I just have to refer to these sections. So then when we get to section 2, which is dealing with 10-7-14 of the Utah Code, at our last meeting we had talked about mapping and cities and towns posting maps on their websites, and a concern that not everybody maybe would have the ability to post a map, or they were small. And so the discussion last time was that we would mandate that each municipality create and maintain a map or maps showing the designated retail service area, and send a copy of that to the state engineer. So that is now what it says, is that they shall transmit a copy of the map or maps to the state engineer and post the map or map on its website if it has more than 500 retail customers. So that was how we kind of got around the idea of which cities or towns are the right size, was based on 500 retail customers. Again, that's a defined term that we've used. If you have more than 500, then you're going to have a website. If you don't, and if you have less than 500, it'd be great, but you're not required to. Then two lines below that, we changed the word policies, adopt by ordinance to municipalities, rules and regulations instead of policies applicable to its designated water service area. That was to deal with the concern that policies are different than rules and regulations, and that the current code that we're amending already talks about rules and regulations, and so just consistency within the code there. Any questions so far about those two changes? Okay, the next one is on the second page, at the top of the second page. Before, the proposal had been that within the designated water service area, the municipality needed to treat customers equitably and have equitable restrictions apply. The concern was that was probably not the best way to try to get to the really big picture item of how do we, you know, deal with making sure that everybody within the designated water service area essentially is treated similarly. And so that language has been replaced with what you see there now, in a manner consistent with principles of equal protection. And so that applies both to service as well as to restrictions when there's anticipated or actual water shortage, that those all happen in a manner consistent with principles of equal protection. Now, I know there's going to be some questions about this. I don't know if we want to talk about that now or after we go through all of the red line stuff.
How do you want to do it? I have one that a suggestion for right here.
Let's stop and talk about it as we're going through, and then if that makes it so we can't get through it, I know I don't want another 3-hour meeting today, but if it gets to where we can't get through it, we'll do it different. But let's start there. Go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to include in this equal protection the maintenance, repair and replacement of infrastructure of the waterworks.
And Representative, why don't you explain why that is? Someone pointed out that in the Constitution, right now, the Constitution provides that the cities shall maintain and operate waterworks. We're taking that language out of the Constitution.
And I think it seems to us that is intuitively included, but we're building fences here, so let's clarify that absolutely includes equal protection in and how a city would determine repair and replacement needs, that is an obligation of the provider.
So I guess the question I have about that is, right now what we have under subsection 4A, and we'll start just with 4. Within its designated water service area, municipality shall provide service to all retail customers, comma, including the initiation and termination of water service, comma, in a manner consistent with principles of equal protection. Are you suggesting that when we talk about providing service to all retail customers, that does not include maintenance, repair, and replacement?
I am suggesting that we have less assurances with the proposed constitutional amendment that removes the clause of maintenance, that a municipality is required to maintain and operate the waterworks. Specifically, maintenance of the waterworks is removed in the proposal. I don't know why we're not in that committee, but if we're going to remove it out of the Constitution, we need to ensure it in the statute that absolutely there's an expectation that when I pay my water bill, I expect that I'm not just paying for what comes out of the pipe, but I'm paying for maintenance on the pipe.
Did the word maintain come out of the constitutional language?
No.
The water, yeah.
Waterworks came
water
out.
Yeah, waterworks.
But maintain didn't come out.
Is still there.
But so let me.
No, that's.
Yeah, operated did, but maintain is still in the constitution.
No, waterworks is
there. That's only
no,
the
I get
water.
It.
No, in the constitution, if you read it the way we adopted it, proposed it, it says maintain your water sources and your water rights. And we took it out. Somebody could interpret that as removing the obligation to maintain your waterworks. Now, those of us who actually manage water systems, we know you can't do it. You know, you can't have one without the other. But some people have raised concerns about that, that we've dropped that obligation. So my view is, well, let's make sure it's protected in the statute, just as we have placed in the statute that a city can't sell its waterworks except for another to another government entity. So the question then becomes, where do we put this? Now, I talked to Mark a little about this over the weekend or whatever, and my view is if we just deleted the reference between the commas on 4A, including the initiation termination, so that we just left it provide service, that would be broad enough to encompass everything. Now, that may not be, to me, that's sort of a way I finesse things. And I've been accused of doing this before, but I've been involved with legislation. You know, the other option is we could just add a separate provision that basically said maintain and operate waterworks in an equitable manner or in accordance with, you know, equal protection. I don't think it changes. Either would accomplish the purpose. The main thing is we want to make sure we address it, those people that are raising concerns about dropping the waterworks out of the constitutional provision. And I think it's up to the committee to decide. Actually, it's up to the representative.
I would say, okay, yeah, I was going to say, I would have a better comfort level of having it expressed than assumed.
So, unless you have a specific idea about how to do this right now, can we express,
come back to this,
take a vote and whether we want the idea expressed and then think of a way to do it instead of spending a lot of time wheeling around with it today?
Just have a comment.
Yeah.
Why? Because this whole process here is talking about a water service area. Why can't we say shall maintain its retail water service area?
So
because then it goes to the whole, because as a retail provider, we all know as a retail provider there are rules that govern that retail area.
So in 4A provides service to all retail customers and maintain?
I think what Paul was suggesting is just to say provide service to all retail customers in a manner consistent with principles of equal protection. And then we don't highlight initiation or termination of water service, but we also don't highlight any other specific terms associated with providing service.
It's actually broader.
That we just say,
okay,
you're going to provide service to all retail customers consistent with equal protection.
And well, then so in your drafting conventions, including initiation and termination, that's not an exhaustive list. But again, what is your reliable foundation? Is that constitution? And because that maintenance part, that waterworks part is gone, I'd rather see it expressed. If you have I'd like to hear why it shouldn't be expressed if you don't think it should be.
Yeah, well, here's my perspective. The Constitution doesn't actually set a maintenance standard.
Right.
The Constitution, the part we're really talking about, says waterworks, water rights, and sources of water supply shall be preserved, maintained, and operated by it for supplying its inhabitants. It's not talking about what you do to maintain it. It just says when you own it, you'll do it for the benefit of your inhabitants. The Constitution is now being changed to say you're going to do it for your retail water service area instead of just your inhabitants. But I don't see, and yeah, we've taken waterworks out, so it's not in the Constitution, but the Constitution doesn't currently tell you how to maintain it. It just says to the extent you maintain it at all, you're going to do it to benefit your citizens, your city residents. And now we're saying to the extent that you have, you know, water sources and water rights, you're going to maintain that for the people that are in your retail water service district. So that's the concern I have, is the Constitution doesn't tell us anything about maintenance. It talks more about inhabitants.
So then I guess I would want, you know, this is a solutions task force, right? And we start with, we started this process with looking at the problems. Do we have a problem regarding inequitable or unequal repair, replacement, maintenance on infrastructure? Do we have any examples, or does it exist where extra jurisdictional water users are not having their infrastructure maintained, repaired and replaced on an equal basis or to federal standards?
So, Representative, I think it's a fair question, but I think these changes will address the question, because going forward, it doesn't matter if you are a resident of City X or City Y, if you're both part of the designated water service area, all services are going to be done in a manner consistent with principles of equal protection. So all customers are treated the same. So I think your question's a fair one about maybe what's happened to date. I don't know if there's any evidence one way or the other, but I think it's a fair hypothetical question. I think this language addresses your concern, because provide service to all retail customers for equal protection. And then, Paul, I think you raise a good point. If you spell out initiation and termination, you're almost saying that those are more important.
Well, I'm afraid the court would interpret anything else you do within sort of that context. Mm-hmm. I like the concept of service, because it's a broad enough term and is a flexible enough term that we can address it as future things change. For example, 50 years ago or whatever, we were talking about SCADA, radio read meters, you know, and other technologies that haven't come on. So I like the term service. I have to admit, as a water manager, I'm a little nervous about putting the Water Works standard in express language, because I don't want a court coming in and dictating my maintenance schedule.
Yeah,
we talked about that.
Ask Jordan Valley about this.
I have to leave. Well, yeah, Jordan Valley is running across that. And that's the last thing we want. What we want, so service is a broad term. And frankly, as a resident in Mill Creek, I would love that change. Because that way I can at least go to the city and say, how are you maintaining my infrastructure versus maintaining it in Sugar House, you know, across the street?
So help me understand why it was removed from the Constitution, then. What does that actually affect?
Well, Water Works is removed from the Constitution because the Constitution prohibits the conveyance of Water Works. And so as long as the Constitution prohibits that, it doesn't allow a city to potentially convey part of its Water Works to another governmental entity under the appropriate circumstances, where perhaps... and the example I think that is shared a lot has to do with St. George. They have a water treatment plant. It actually really services a much larger area than the city of St. George, and so it would make sense for that water treatment plant to be owned by the district, the conservancy district, rather than to be owned by them. But the Constitution says they can't convey it.
And it was built at a time before the conservancy district provided all those services.
Yeah.
So St. George provided services to a larger area. Now there's another public entity.
It's not an abandonment of the customers.
Paul?
Maybe I can give you an example, a representative. Salt Lake City and Sandy have, as we've grown north and Salt Lake City's grown south, and now Cottonwood Heights is in Mill Creek, have come into play. There's been areas where we've had people served on the Sandy water system who ended up living in Cottonwood Heights as Cottonwood Heights Annex, and vis-a-vis others that were served by Salt Lake City that end up being annexed in by Sandy City. So this allows us, and even in Jordan Valley's instance, we end up trying to rectify old water systems so that the people get the water from the entity that's their governance. So in the instance, Salt Lake City and Sandy did a transfer of custom to put the ones that are in Cottonwood Heights into the Salt Lake City system, and the ones that were in Sandy, take them off the Salt Lake City system. So the statutory change allows, makes it clear that we can do that. But in no instance was there, they're not our customers, and so we're going to give them less level of service. And what I'm hearing here and agreeing with is the language in this bill as written gives whether you or I live within or without the same city, but we're both served on the same water system, we can expect the same level of fire protection, water quality, and reliability. Whether it's good or bad, either they're underfunding or adequately funding the system, but we'll be treated the same. Not, we won't differentiate.
And I don't know that if that's the greatest example. We've got cities pulling out of sort of other service providing systems that feel like there's a lack of equity. So and they want more control locally. And so I guess my one of the examples that was given here early in this task force was if you have an area with aging infrastructure that maybe is not getting the maintenance it needs, is it possible that a city could continue to provide the water, but say you're on the hook for your own maintenance of the system? And so I think those need to go together. And I think I hear Paul to say that it does. That's implied in service. Service includes maintenance. I'm concerned if there is, and I'm trying to play devil's advocate on this, can anybody conceive of that scenario where a provider could potentially say under our proposals here, constitutional and statutory, that we'll give you the water, you pay for the water, but you're on the hook for the infrastructure, now we're giving it to you?
No.
So you don't think that can happen under these proposals?
It can't happen under the Drinking Water Act and the regulations right now. And more important, Dale just pointed out something interesting on maintenance. Maintenance does not include replacement.
And sometimes maintenance ceases to be viable.
That's another reason why we don't want to make it too narrow. We want the broader issue.
I think Paul's amendment would be great for us to adopt.
So I have a motion to adopt the amendment to remove the words including the initiation and termination of water service from 4A. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right.
And if you have other rule considerations, Representative, we can always talk to the division who would love to put together the regulations and infrastructure.
I do think that this is an opportunity, as the bill is being presented in committee, to potentially talk about initiation, termination of service, other things like that, as far as how equal protection applies to people without necessarily having it in the bill. And so it does create a legislative record of the intent of what's going on there.
Does it not also open up the door for additional rules to be put in place,
yes,
by Drinking Water to assist in making sure those systems are maintained? Because it goes into the rulemaking. You pass a law, and then somebody has to make a rule that governs the process for the law just to...
The rule stands, though, as a performance standard. I mean, maintenance for one city, a new city, may be very small budget and have actually higher level of service versus another city that may require a lot more investment to provide that performance level of service. So I think one thing, as a longtime water operator, your issue, I think, Representative Coleman, as I understand it, I think is addressed through that level of service requirements, the definition of the service area, and the equal treatment of two customers in terms of... That means that we have a master plan that says either we're going to fund or not going to fund fire flow or water quality, but we're going to treat everyone the same. And I think I'm agreeing with Paul in the sense that if... You leave it at that local government level to decide, do they want to do a water rate increase this year to fund, to increase that level of service, or no, they have other fiscal needs that they're addressing at that point in time, but they're not going to single out, oh, you're in the Midvale service area of Sandy's water system.
Correct. That's been a problem all along. That's why this is a great solution, because in the water industry, if you are managing a water system or you're the board of trustees of that water system, we don't look at people as being inside, outside, wrong side of the street, right side of the street. We all know that if we have a percentage of breaks that you can't put Band-Aids on, you have to replace a pipeline. The only way we can go to our customer base is we create a citizens committee. They go out and they look at all of the issues we have. We include them. and they go out and they say, look, I think, and they recommend to us, I think you should fix this and this, and they help us prioritize. We always have gone to the street for citizens to be involved when we have a major crisis. It helps us in garnering the funds we need if we have to go to an actual bond election. So involving people on the street, this whole process in this piece as a companion to the constitutional amendment, actually for the first time in history, brings it closer to the people and the users. And it is a very, very important process to get adopted in this next legislative session. So.
Yeah, I think it goes miles towards assuring that people, whether they're in or out of the city, are going to be treated the same.
Because if they aren't, yeah, people are going to come back and say, I want more change. Yeah. So.
All right,
subsection.
Move on.
I think
Ogden
so.
Will be
section
in perfect three. Condition because you're already doing a bond election, right, or something for infrastructure.
We're an old city.
Yeah, I know.
We've been around for a long time.
That's okay.
We got a lot of old pipes everywhere. Okay, so subsection five. We did a little bit talking about what the section doesn't prohibit cities from municipalities from doing. So nothing in this section precludes subsection A. A municipality from enacting service or other restrictions affecting localized areas or the entire area of its designated water service area based on, and this is where we made a couple of changes, and the addition is, or the change is based on operation or maintenance needs, emergency situations, or, and this is really the addition, to address health, safety, and general welfare needs. So again, just that general, that standard of what governments do to deal with health, safety, and general welfare. So that was the change there. So then going on to the water rate section. So we talked about this kind of non-exclusive list of what you throw into a water rate, and we kind of had talked about, well, maybe we won't make any changes in our draft. We'll just let Representative Coleman direct legislative research that this needs to be a non-exclusive list. Let me explain why I'm kind of paranoid about this particular part of what we're doing here. So a non-exclusive list is great, and this should be non-exclusive, but it's possible, and I'm not sure that it's probable, but it's possible that a municipality might not use any of these standards but still have a reasonable basis for how they do their rates. So I don't want a non-exclusive list that says, well, you have to at least do one of the things in this list, because maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have a completely different reason that is reasonable, but it's not in the list. And so I've been just paranoid about that, which is why I used the language I originally, which was examples of a reasonable basis. I don't know if legislative research will be any happier with what I'm proposing here, but this is what I'm suggesting under 5A. A reasonable basis for charging different rates may include, among other things. And then we have the list, the non-exclusive list. I'm not sure they'll like it more than what we had before, but it gets to my...
We won't know until we get in
there. It gets to my point.
They don't love that kind of clause, but they'll tell us.
But if you understand,
they won't just strike it as examples.
Well, examples was going to go no matter what, so yeah. Hopefully this is
got to give
Mark, sometimes you can get away with language like includes but not and not limited to.
I think they like that even less, but we'll figure it out as we go forward.
This is where the legislators.
Yeah, exactly.
That's okay. If you insist you want it, you got it, right?
For the most part.
I think there's a much better chance that you'll get something and not just get the whole thing struck with this language. And so
I do too. I like the change.
But you do. I mean, we have consensus on this. I mean, I'm with you. I understand what we're trying to do here.
Okay.
Mark, I really like when you use the term reasonable reason.
Reasonable reason. I use that.
No, you didn't say it. You said it out loud.
Oh, okay.
Because I hope I didn't actually write that down.
That can be reasoning that's not reasonable.
Yes,
so I wrote that down in my notes just so I could keep it.
Cam, be careful. He's paranoid.
And maybe schizophrenic too. I don't know. So then the addition under Romanet 3 was what we had talked about. Investments made by one class to acquire water sources and supply, or
build or maintain the system. That was just some other example of investments by one class that maybe were being left out. And then at the end, instead of an or, there's an and. Again, this is a legislative research thing, that this is a non-exclusive list, and everything in there is okay. You don't have to do one or the other. Inevitably, somebody will misinterpret no matter what we do.
And 10 years from now, they'll interpret it.
They'll say, why did you use and instead of or? But anyway, so that's just there. So then down to subsection 6, and this is really what we had quite a bit of dialogue, I think, about was how do we involve these non-resident customers? And rather than talking about connections, since retail customers is a defined word, if more than 10% of the retail customers within a large municipal drinking water is designated water service area or outside of the corporate boundary, then this kicks in. And then we just made that same change all the way through there, substituting retail customers for water connections. So that's really all that's happening in that part of the section. And then I did add, I'm not sure if it's necessary or not, but I did add a section dealing with the state engineer's office. So in last year's, in one of the bills that was out last year, there was some direction under the state engineer kind of responsibilities that the state engineer put on the website, on Division of Water Rights website, all of these maps. As far as like his big picture responsibilities, that seemed pretty darn far down the list of big picture responsibilities. So I was just suggesting a different section to put it in under 73-5-16, which say the state engineer shall publish conspicuously on the state engineer's website the map or maps submitted by a municipality pursuant to section 10-7-14-3A. I'm not actually sure this is required. The state engineer's office can do this, I think, whether it's in the statute or not. But if we want to have it, it seemed like this was a better place to put it, is all my comments.
I think Boyd ought to commit right now whether they would do it.
Oh, I think he's made that commitment.
Yeah, I told you I'd do it. But if you want a place to put it, I think this is a better place. We at least read 73, Title 73.
More than Title 10?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the suggestion there. And then this is just this coordinating with the Constitution clause that I had suggested. This bill takes effect on January 1st, 2021, if the amendment to the Utah Constitution proposed by whatever, you know, bill is going to be out there. That's what those asterisks represent. 2019 general session passes the legislature and is approved by a majority of those voting on it at the next regular general election. So that's just the coordinating language.
I like it.
Well done.
I move we support it.
Wait, Coleman,
I'm going to go home by one.
No, it can't be that easy.
Why should this sponsor?
When you've done your homework and you've done a job, it's easy. Okay.
All right. So, okay, I got to just throw some stuff out on the table on this because while I appreciate and respect all the attorneys in the room, I have to have my own that I have to listen to as well. So here, and this is where we ended in our last meeting. We ended on the issue with the advisory board. And does it give additional protections that we think it does? And it's pretty soft here. It's not an appellate body. It's not a quasi-judicial recommending body like a planning commission. It's exactly not. So does it give the protection that we think it does? I don't think that it does. But if we do anything more with it, do we run afoul of RIPR? So that was where we ended the last meeting. So I've since gotten my legal counsel on this. Because extra jurisdictional impacts, so RIPR that says you can't have the state come in and establish a commission that then tells the city how to function. The exclusions to that generally are there is one that views whether those functions affect people or entities beyond the boundaries of the municipality. So theoretically, we could give this advisory board more teeth and not run afoul of RIPR. So I but I don't know if that's a will. And I think that we don't have enough parties that are the ones at risk or subject to. I don't know if we have all of those voices at this table that would in my mind, I would want a comfort level from them that they feel like this goes far enough to add a protection. It's not an appeal. It's not quasi-judicial. So I think it's weak. But it's more than nothing. And I hate to go through this process and simply say we like it because it's better than nothing. Can we get it good? Can we get to a good place? Okay, so that's sort of the one more tangible thing. The more esoteric thing is an overarching concern that even with the constitutional change that would allow transactions of waterworks, rights, etc.
Just waterworks.
Yeah, not rights.
Just waterworks.
Not the Constitution, not the waterworks provision. The whole thing we're seeking to change. So there are parties who would like permanency on the water. There are implications that are rising for our real estate industry. And I met with them last week. Terminable water is gravely concerning. So one of the problems we sought to solve here is creating permanency, more reliability, ongoing reliability. Even if we do this statutorily and constitutionally, the attorneys that I'm consulting with are saying that there is still very, very likely an overarching legal theory that a city is responsible, has a fiduciary duty of loyalty to their citizens, notwithstanding any contractual obligations to citizens. In fact, mine said unequivocally, 100 judges would say 100 times, you have a duty to your citizens first, regardless of contract. Contractual conveyance of a right is weaker and subservient to a larger, overarching right that the citizens have who acquired the water and distribute the water. So I'm just putting that out there, not the attorney in the room, but that these are the legal theories that have been presented to me as complicating this effort. So, and I don't know that if we resolve this today, because I literally got that counsel this morning on a Monday morning. So it's definitely a place I feel like I need to go down that road more. Because what I don't want to do is provide a false sense of protection to citizens and end up in court, and which some of this stuff I guess ultimately can just end up in court. But I want to explore those legal theories so that we have an understanding of whether this accomplishes the protections we think they do.
Go ahead, Pauline.
I'd like to dive into this one. Maybe I'm crazy, but if we, the efforts of this committee is everyone has admitted there's been issues. Once you change the Constitution to take the crutch away from some groups to not manage a water system with equal protection for all users, you pretty much take that 120 some odd year history and say, set it aside and say, we're done with that way of doing business. What this does, it puts it in the realm of, if you are a public utility and you have a designated in the law water service area, doesn't matter where, under the guidelines for the federal safe drinking water, the clean water, you are now saying you have a service area that you're a utility for. That's a public entity for all users. It's no longer just a city public utility. It is now a service industry for anyone who's connected, which should have all the references of inside, outside have gone away. Those are the monikers that were giving us trouble. If we, as a utility, Paul can tell you, if our water users had this in front of them, it doesn't matter who they are, Sandy residents, and we have 50% Sandy and 50% now Metro Township and some unincorporated, we can no longer think in terms of inside, outside. They are our water users. That takes precedence over all political, I'm an inside city person. They're taking on a responsibility. In fact, if Salt Lake City were to say to Cottonwood Heights, to Mill Creek, and to Holiday, I want you to buy this, take over this infrastructure because we're no longer going to maintain it, this kind of precludes that. Yeah, they can offer it up for sale, but they don't have the water to put in the pipe. To admit they are the utility, to admit they are the service provider, puts everything on a different plateau of equality for all those users. And there are high standards in the water industry, the state, the feds, anti-degradation, all kinds of things that are superior to any kind of what they might want to do politically. This removes the political hammer. This makes Salt Lake City the service provider and utility for all of the East Bench. And I would dare say this is a very healthy future and gives people options they never had. And I've been doing this since 1991. We bought a company in February of 1995. This is our 23rd year of running a water company. And our citizens are very happy. It doesn't matter where they live because it eliminates that discussion. We're the example of how that worked. Salt Lake City has an opportunity to be a great utility. They are a great utility. They have a lot of obligations. They also have a lot of infrastructure. How is the money going to be garnered to do all those repairs? It'll take the whole service area to make that decision in the future, not just Salt Lake City Council. So that's how I see this playing out.
And this has an advantage also to cities. Because think about it. I can see where your attorney's coming from, a city's obligation to all of its residents, inhabitants. But there are cities that only provide water to maybe half the city or a portion of the city. By creating this designated service area in the Constitution, in a sense, their obligation for water service goes only to the designated water service area. No longer do they have to have the live in fear that somebody else will say, no, you have an obligation to do this. That some of that was at the heart of the White City Sandy dispute, because Sandy felt concerned about, well, don't we have the obligation to take care of the residents within our area? And so this will solve that issue, because now Sandy's Public Utility Division Department only concerned with those within this designated service area. Draper City's another classic example, right? They only provide water to how much of their city?
Very little. They have one well.
You know, and so there's all sorts of advantages in the constitutional change, because in effect it gives the cities a lot of the advantages that districts have had forever. See, districts should provide water. We aren't concerned with the political boundaries. Cities have had the constitutional restriction on it. So this is actually a great change for that. On your second point about the advisory committee, yeah, it's a weak solution, but it may be all we can get right now. I'm willing to accept it, frankly, in Mill Creek. At least it lays out the groundwork. If cities abuse it, well, then maybe we can always revisit it later.
There's a cleanup bill.
But right now, I think it's a good solution. It's something that everyone can live with.
A bill looking for a cleanup bill in the future?
Well,
there's
no,
always
every major change I've seen is
there's always things. Something comes up. Technically.
Yeah,
the
struggle
we have is I don't know how you create something that forces a city to make decisions that are within their jurisdiction.
But they decided
so this
to
provides
have the
a way to give input.
Yeah.
Right.
The
and
city
then,
decided to maintain and go out and prosper and have this service area. It isn't, nobody's forcing anybody to do anything. We're just now saying you have a service area.
Yeah, serve it.
Serve it and
serve
run it.
It.
Yeah.
So the contention is that this is different from Richard Bay. It's when a city owns it, then there is a different fiduciary duty. Potentially, that's the legal theory they've presented to me. Is
I think Richard has the same problem if he serves outside his area.
Well, if he serves it, but
and he does.
No, they're part of his.
No,
they're part of his area.
He can do it legally, but if push comes to shove.
But the bottom line is,
who governs?
You adopt the constitutional change, and I guarantee you, those judges aren't going to rule the way he's fearing, because they will look at the Constitution, and they'll say. No, the legislature and the people have spoken. We're not judging water anymore on the political boundaries. We're looking at service area boundaries.
And I had wondered initially about whether this should be drafted broader than just municipalities. Did it make sense to draft this for municipality as well as any other district that might serve people outside of its designated political boundaries? It seemed like actually that was a lot more work, and there wasn't enough evidence that was a problem to justify it at this point. But I'm not sure that it's a bill in search of cleanup. It's just solving a problem, and like any bill, if there's still additional problems in the future, then you know we'll have to look at those. But
the goal of the Constitutional Committee was to at least remove the barriers, so the legislature can address things.
Sure.
Whereas last year, as you found out, you know, you can try to pass bills, but everyone is raising the Constitution to try to stop it. So this way, change the Constitution and pass the best bill you can, which I think this is. I think I'm very pleased with this bill. I could support it.
If we move forward with having a consensus and we have more people at the table, as we do, you could pass this bill in the first, second week of the legislature. There's nothing holding this back. None of us are going to the Hill to say, no, 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 wait a minute. Play it. Got a problem. You may have one or two individuals, but this working group represents the water industry that serves from various standpoints, all kinds of water industry. You've got conservancies, you've got districts, you've got cities, you've got everybody at the table that is in the business that knows how to run these systems. And this is the tool we've needed to make sure that everyone fairly and equally treats its customer base the same.
Okay, so can I just put my own just disclaimer out here? Disclaimer, disclosure, whatever. So I have been known to put my own feelings aside and thoughts aside and just defer to and bring other people together. So that's so I don't have a problem with that, and that's kind of how I started this, is whatever I have in my head is probably going to change over this process, and I'm very open to that and bringing in people that I want to listen to, and I've had my own learning curve to scale. So I'm happy to bring what solutions we think, even if they're not perfect. So I'm joking about looking for the future bill. But I'm happy to take whatever we feel even gets us partway. while it's open, if there's a better way, I say let's do it. But if not, if we feel like this is a good first step, I'm happy to do that, even if it's not perfect. And I do want to defer to the people both who are doing it and the experts, as well as the people who feel like they are at risk. So I still have my little bit of hesitancy is still that I want to talk to those cities that feel like they're still at risk. I want to hear that from them. And Cam, if you know anybody, or Paulina, if you want to facilitate that. I want to feel and hear from them that they're satisfied that they have more protection with this, more reliability than they currently do, and I'm happy to even just go that far. Transparency, I still want, you know, absolutely that, and I think we get there with this as well. But to the extent that I have other attorneys saying that this may result in a false sense of protection because of overarching municipal fiduciary duty of loyalty to citizens, I'd like to explore that.
Well, they should have been at the table. I'm sorry. To have this nebulous behind-the-scenes group.
Well, this
really
is not
bothers
a, it's not
me.
A behind-the-scenes group.
Okay,
so I have my own drafting attorneys that I rely on.
A lot of the drafting attorneys like to put their own opinions in it from historic perspective. I remember a drafting attorney that I wished we could have sent on a mission. Because he absolutely refused to do what the public and we needed. He was awful.
So I don't know.
Gone.
I like to think that the ones I'm working with are fairly dispassionate on this. But
it's the understanding they don't have. They haven't lived in the trenches and done what we've done.
I think they bring up an important theoretical concept, and we talked about that earlier on. But I think practically, if we're going to serve outside of political jurisdiction, we put together some pretty good ways to make it work better.
Are you at a point where you can vote to approve the basic language such as Representative Coleman can take it to Leslie's research? Because I'm sorry, they will make changes.
We're also running out of time here to come back for meeting after meeting in order to have a bill that passes quickly.
But look at the time frame, you guys. I mean, we created was this was just days ago. So, you know, within hours to a few days of this draft and Mark's, and in fact, I didn't have Mark's when I went to the drafting attorneys. I went with kind of from the discussion in the notes I took. So, you know, our drafting attorneys can't turn all this stuff in a day. So so I went with them. It went to them as quickly as possible. They put other things aside to come back and give me some opinions. And I don't know how to make that faster, but if I will get their counsel...
Well, we
ultimately
can make a motion to submit this to drafting council and then come back in a meeting
really,
with...
That's
really
not really our job.
Right.
We're not legislators.
You can only
We're going back to Mike Seiler.
And I promise you, other groups, whoever is, like you just said, Holiday didn't even know about this process that we were doing this. I promise you, we are going to find people that didn't know about this or didn't feel like they got to weigh in. And so it will happen. And I would far rather, like what Laura said, I would much rather that happen before January than it happen in February.
Well, we're planning on doing that this week.
So what happens now? Does it go back to the executive task force?
Well, it goes back to Styler, right? Because he was directed by the legislature to create the group.
Right.
Well, not necessarily. I guess the groups. And then he's supposed to give a report back. I think it will go to the task force, but that's not the statutory route. The statutory route is it goes to Styler.
And he's to make a report.
And he's to make a report.
But each committee has to approve the consensus on the language.
Whatever they're going to do.
If we're going to have input, then we need to get that back.
Doesn't preclude further input. But we have to say Is there anybody in this room that really has a burning desire to change something in this? If not, we're okay to share it. Can we now share it with the mayors and say, this is what we've come up with so far?
And then what is the league?
Representative, I think to the degree that certain every municipality in the state will be affected because we all drink water, right? But the people you have around this room, large and small, working in this industry, I think this legislation, I started the participation in this not thinking, one, we had a problem to solve, or two, that much would come out of it. I actually look at what we've created, and I'm realizing we've addressed most of the things that you came to this, brought to us. The transparency, the accountability, the treatment inside and outside, and tying it to the constitutional amendment. So from an outsider looking at what I've seen at the legislative level in water for a long time, this is big stuff, Representative, that's in a good way. So I don't want to be tarnished by someone that hasn't heard anything about it, and now all of a sudden they're thinking, this is bad. It's not. It's really good. So I would like the opportunity, I think, back to Paulina's point, if there are ones that we miss, that's okay. But I think as you help us engage the constituents that are sharing information, give us the opportunity to help you educate them at the same level and say, what is your concern? And there are a couple things that, this tenet of serving your residents versus customer, that's something. But I will agree that the Federal Clean Water Act and Safe Drinking Water Act, if we start messing around the state level and people are getting sick and dying or getting, I don't see that happening. So what I'm hoping you come away from this group, you're the legislator in the room, but we're the experts in the room, and you've got a collective, probably 1,000 years of water expertise at all levels throughout the state of Utah. This is good stuff. So if someone's concerned, please bring them to the table and let us talk to them. And then if we did miss something, I agree with you. We don't want to have a cleanup bill, and I think we're teasing around the table. When I'm looking at this, I don't see a lot of cleanup needed, to be honest.
Yeah, and part of the, Ruth Van, particular, she frequently participates in this kind of stuff, but she's out on maternity. So the fact that I even had to kind of find someone who's not exactly where Ruth Ann is on the history. That's a little bit of a liability for me. It's a weakness for me. And she'll be back in October, but I don't think we can wait till October. I think September, I think we want to have our proposals go before Natural Resources in October.
Yeah, in fact, I just got an email from Brian that we have to have.
Let's get this.
Questions and concerns.
Yeah. So I feel like, because I know those of you who are in the risk position have shared with me that this is so much better than what we have, and I'm fine to go with that far. My the only hesitation is that it might not actually be a protection you think it is. So I just want to throw that on the table. I'm fine to support what we have currently, move it, keep it moving, but just throwing that disclaimer out there that I do now have really recent legal input that there's a prevailing legal theory that a city-owned right may be regarded differently in the courts.
Yeah, but the city rights are worthless if they don't have customers.
So
they can't put them to use.
I think that's a great thing to put to the the folks that can answer that question during this process. I think that is a good one.
I really appreciate the fact that you're trying to resolve all these things before January.
Yeah.
Because we've all learned in the water community that if you weren't pass a water bill, work it all out, get the consensus done so that you can go in there and
And I don't want the blindsiding that I had by some people in the committee that would tell me one thing and then say something different on the stand, and they all know who they are in this room.
This was
I'm happy to support this and keep it moving. I appreciate we have water law experts at this table, but I'm also consulting with municipal law experts. And even though you probably cross over quite a bit, that is an important part of this that I'm happy to support this and keep it flowing, but also just have that caveat that I may bring more information to the table, maybe bring those attorneys in.
That's the advantage of getting the league involved with this whole process.
One thing I wanted to add, Representative, is that I think you raised excellent questions that should be asked now, because frankly, they're the types of questions that I ask myself on every issue, as I represent 1,380 elected officials, not to mention all of the municipal attorneys and city administrators and the senior staff that support those 1,380 elected officials. But that's a big group that I have to try to bring along on every major issue. So inevitably, it doesn't surprise me that Mayor Dolley, with the summer that he's had with the Cottonwood Mall redevelopment, despite all the emails that we've sent to our massive email listserv and everything else, doesn't surprise me that he didn't see it. It's very possible his city manager did, and he just hadn't been briefed on it yet, because that happens when you look at all the issues that are out there. That's why we try to take advantage of our conferences and policy committees, so that you don't get blindsided in February by City X, or, just speaking of my membership, City X comes up to you and says, hey, what about this? You should be able to turn to them and say, the league was there the whole time. You need to be engaged with the league to get this information. So I am very sensitive to what you're asking, because that's exactly why I had the conversations with Mayor Silvestrini and Mayor Dolley last week, to make sure they were going to be at the conference this week so we could have this discussion with the Salt Lakes and the Mill Creeks of the world, as well as our small folks. And we're going to have people from Blanding and Ivins and all over the state who provide water, and we want to make sure that everybody can say they had a chance to look at it and they're comfortable with the direction.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you where I'm at. I'm very pleased with where we're at on this draft, especially with the removal of the initiation and termination of water service. I'm pleased that it has transparency with the mapping. And we need the league needs to have some certainty with that the concept is moving forward, because they have an annual convention once a year, and that's coming up in tomorrow. And so, you know, remembering that we're a subcommittee of the Utah Water Task Force, I'm about ready to recommend this to the task force.
I'm ready to take a motion.
Who's the subcommittee?
We are.
The Executive Water Task Force, not the legislative.
Are we?
We're not attached to the Executive Water Task Force at all. This was just a directive by the Natural Resources Committee. So it's important that we have that understanding.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the task force will talk about this, but we're not reporting to the task force.
Yes.
We're reporting
to the department.
These were independent committees.
Boy,
they weren't tied to the task force.
Okay, I'm ready to make a recommendation to the Natural Resource Committee. I'm pleased with where we're at.
Is that a motion of support?
I'll second it.
That's a motion.
Is there any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. I'll report that to Mike.
I'm amazed.
Mark, thanks for all your help.
I'm just trying to get.
I wanted to have a discussion about that, because we do get to maps here, which is a level of transparency. Representative Stratton seemed to be looking for more. I haven't had anybody else suggest it anyway to get more, so this was my offhand suggestion if you want to entertain it. Or want to do something else?
Well, I have one idea, and I just throw this out, okay? Last year, Representative Coleman carried a bill that was, we went through that process.
Yeah.
And as part of that bill, it had some mapping language in it. Some of that bill could take effect immediately if it was passed. And that might actually be good for some of the cities to actually start putting some mapping together before the other bill comes and takes effect and they have to do the next designated water service area. So I just throw that out. I don't know, Representative, if you would be interested in carrying another just pure transparency type bill that would be effective this year.
So do we feel not, like there's not enough in this?
No, the problem is this bill takes effect only if the Constitution passes.
That's true.
So
yeah.
I'm looking for what we're looking, I think what Representative Stratton is looking for is the transparency regardless.
But he was actually looking for numbers, which I was like, I can't
well,
give
so
you.
I'm just, resolutions, they're all fine and good, but they don't do much.
So I guess my thought on that are two things. First of all, I know after the last committee meeting that was it Dell? Were you going to go, or maybe it wasn't you? I think the Mike Styler and Steve Clyde and the League of Cities and Towns, I think we're going to go meet with Representative Stratton.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they haven't had a chance to do that yet.
Okay.
So without having done that, I don't think we have direction about whether this. Whether he wants this or not, or whether we should go forward. So I think we should just defer this.
Okay. We made the scheduling request.
So we were in hopes that you would carry your transparency bill and put the mapping.
That's what's filed. That's what's filed.
So
I mean, that's what I have right now.
For that already.
So.
But my perspective is that whatever is comes, if there's going to be an immediate transparency bill, that it just should be as consistent as possible with this implementation language so that they're not stepping on each other's toes or creating a whole different scheme when compared with each other.
So what if we put it in, okay, here's what's crazy. There's over 600 bills already filed. Over 600?
I've heard them all, Jan, before the convention.
I filed one last week, and then it came up as like 629. So,
That doesn't even mean people haven't won election yet.
That's right. Well, it's in the priorities, too. You know,
they all got to be high priority. So if you do one.
Okay.
So what I'm wondering is, could we, in the same bill, put that transparency piece in with its own enacting dates, and then have the rest trigger later.
Well, who's carrying this?
So, well, I mean, I would be. This would. Okay.
I think if there are pieces of this that can be implemented now, and if that's possible to do it in the same bill, that would seem fine.
Be like a progressive. This is enacted at the close of the session. Or upon signature, or whatever.
Well, whatever the regular may.
Should you wait till your meeting with Stratton and find out what's going on?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I'm just going to say, I mean, you got this portion here about the maps. You could make that portion effective immediately,
right,
and leave the rest continue.
Right. Yeah, that's what.
Yeah, this portion right here.
Okay.
But if anything in the rest of the bill is a hang up and goes down, then we don't have the transparency.
Nothing to hang up.
Well, yeah, I think we'd probably do okay. I mean, we have this consensus anyway.
629?
Yeah, something like that is crazy.
Yeah. We don't have anything in the one something age.
So I do, yeah. So I mean, I have the water transparency bill. I filed it as the water transparency bill. But
well, isn't this whole transparency?
So I think we can probably just change the title a little bit. But anyway,
we have a severability clause in it too.
Because if you do, this addition that Representative Stratford put in, then we can take and have this
of the committee. Let's just be clear.
Well, you drafted it. It's your pen. Accept it. Author.
If we enacted them now, does that mean that the city council has to enact the designated water service area?
Well, that's what I think we have to talk about, because we don't want to jump on designated water service area before the Constitution.
Yeah.
So if it's a mapping, it would be a pretty simple, like kind of like last year, if you serve outside of your area, you need to have a map of where you service outside your area.
Or just a map of where you serve water.
Right.
Yeah, it was just a map.
Of where your retail service is. But it's going to be, I think it needs to be pretty simple so that it gets the ball rolling but doesn't then overlap.
Why wouldn't it hurt to have this language right here?
I sort of like
well, because this talks about the retail water service area, and until that gets created through the Constitution, there's only going to be like one map.
659.
Wow.
Okay.
Well,
so I think we can talk about that a lot.
They can still be designated a retail service.
No, I think representatives
won't have the juice.
One thing that would be
well, no, there's actually issues with prohibition and
decide what, which you ought to have somebody on this subcommittee be able to talk to Ledge Research. And then if they have questions, that so they don't always have to go to you. That's what we did with the Constitutional Committee. committee?
Yeah, I think I've opened it up to a couple people already, so I think I'll open that up to
you.
I don't remember who else, but...
Okay.
Yeah, you'd have to tweak the language because it's got designated services.
Right.
That's easy to adjust.
Yeah. But I think if we're talking about a mapping thing immediately that's just outside your service area, and then this would supersede that after the Constitution.
I've seen that in bills.
So on the... Well, okay. I'll save that.
Okay.
Does someone want to make a motion to that extent? Do we want to support doing the mapping earlier than the implementation?
So moved.
We got a motion. Is there a second?
See a second.
I'll second. I'm trying not to make motions.
All in favor? The Duke question?
Yeah. Did you receive a second?
Yes.
Representative Coleman.
You have grade maps in your little booklet on your district.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Is it consistent with the rest of the framework going
yes.
forward?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
So the only difference is you sever them if the Constitution then fails.
We're not severing.
I think it's going to be an addition because you can't do it by ordinance. I think there'd be legal issues.
Yeah,
I'm sure Mark could come up with
I'm willing to vote in favor of it as long as we get to have some dialogue about it.
Yeah, but some conceptual way to do it without creating problems.
He wants to write it, so.
I just want to
he
be
can draft it.
No, I understand the concern.
Yeah, I'm only voting yes too. I just want to make sure we're clear on what that framework would look like.
So at this point, I'm saying if we can conceptually find a way to include immediate implementation of providing a map of your service area without creating legal encumbrances, we ought to do that.
And without the definition of the legislative process of creating a designated service
sure.
area.
Yeah.
Right.
They can do that.
It's just the transparency to have a map.
I have complete confidence.
And between Paul and Mark, it can be done.
Hey. That's the clarified motion, I think. All in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay. Sounds like that's unanimous. All right. Other business?
Oh, we got that in 60 minutes. That was awesome.
I told you.
Is there anything else?
You look at me.
All right. I'll consider us adjourned. And I'm not planning another meeting because that's what I'll report unless there's a need for that.
I think it's painful.
Thank you. So when's the next meeting of the...
There is no meeting.
Task force.
Okay.
Task force.
And you're going to report it to the task force? When's the task force meeting?
They'll update the task force.
Update.
Yeah.
It was like the
20th. It's coming up.
25th. And then Mike's supposed to have a report out from all these committees by the 30th.
What time do they meet?
1:30 on the 25th.
And where?
Here.
Here?
Yeah.
So I may have to go to that. Wait, what is that one?
That's just the water task force.
So talking about not getting blindsided by updating them. And making sure they're on board.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and then Brian has just emailed this morning that both the Water Development Commission and Natural Resources Commission, or Natural Resources Committee, want to report on this as well.
I don't think it's a point.
So, when do in their 1 month where interim doesn't happen, is that November? You're done with interim in October, right?
No, we'll have interim clear through October, November, December. We'll
have interim September
that we don't have.
Yeah, so it's the October 17th interim that he's asked that
so
we schedule.
So you want to report on that?
You know, the other thing is, well, honestly, probably want to talk about it in a caucus meeting or two because of how complicated it is. And then we have an all-day caucus where we take the big issues, and so we might want to walk through some of that.
We're working on something last time.
Ask leadership for a few minutes. Getting everybody.
I think he's having a meeting with all of them too. So
thank you all for all the effort you put into this.
I know
you have a lot of other things you're trying to do.
No, no, no. We're going to talk about this. There's only one thing that I've heard a question about, and that's the advisory board. So that's
I just want to make sure that you're